I mean, totally in some places. And like this pattern has already, I mean, it's been in existence since the civil rights legislation of the 1960s. And something I always really stress with my clients is, even just looking at like the history of civil rights legislation, like you had the post-Reconstruction amendments and the 1860s. And then, a couple of civil rights amendments, a couple of civil rights legislative laws passed back then just to like protect the recently emancipated Black folks from just like terror. But then it was like a whole 100 years like of just like nothing. Like, yeah, Black Wall Street, lynchings, all this craziness. And like, you know what we had to do to get to the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1964? You know how many people got to get beat and kids getting hosed? People getting murdered, white people getting murdered. Like, it was a lot. It was a lot to get here. And if these folks think we're going back.
That's what's ironic too, because the same idea of privacy was that also based upon love versus
That was a part of the, that was a part of the, but one thing that Loving did, that opinion did, that no other opinion in, I think, the history of the Supreme Court had did since, but it talks specifically about the history of white supremacy, why that was a problem. And, that was an example of the court being honest about, what it was. And, but that's also,
This is a interracial marriage audience loving.
Yes, Loving versus Virginia was a Supreme Court case that was decided, I want to say, in 1967. Like 2 weeks or like 4 weeks after the famous movie starring Sidney Poitier, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, it came out as a film. So the film's like it was a little bit ahead of its time. It came out the same year that Loving was passed, but yeah. And it's a wonder because
Yeah, as you're going through this history, Brandy, like it really like draws me back to what fundamentally worries me the most about this decision, which is, can all of this stuff get changed just because we have a different political makeup in the Supreme Court? And it worries me to think that, yeah, everything could be like on the line. I don't want it to be, and I hope that it's not, but
But it
fundamentally, that
is.
scares me more than anything else is that we now have a political court that just wants to do whatever it wants to do. I think the power of the Supreme Court lay in the fact that we thought that it was trying to be objective arbiter of slowly moving society to the next step and moving us forward.
But
Whereas now it seems like you've got a bunch of people that just want to do whatever they want.
It is endangered. Like all of this is an this is endangered. I mean, Clarence Thomas released a side opinion essentially saying like the legal logic that was used to overturn Roe versus Wade can be used for Griswold. It can be used for a whole host of things. And so we have to open that can of worms, essentially. That's what he's saying. But it's ironic because
He's married to a white woman.
he's married to a white woman, and so is Mitch McConnell's married to like I think she's Japanese or Korean. She's Asian American. And so it's just really I'm like, at what point are you going to stop if you're talking about privacy? Like if you're talking this idea of the underpinnings of these decisions, it's like Clarence Thomas, first of all, your wife also was like part of a coup attempt. Let's just be honest. So, but he wants to go after some of these other opinions.
Yeah.
Right, like contraception gone. Like, I also don't think a lot of people realize the danger, the other dangers of Roe versus Wade and this federalist ruling. So it's up to the states in which abortion is to be legal or banned. They were saying, like, I listened to a podcast about how this may be the spark of a modern civil war. And this isn't a civil war where we're going to meet each other out in a battlefield. These are going to be like a civil war of scuffles, but then also states fighting each other. So someone earlier on this this episode mentioned, our podcast mentioned, you know, there are states considering suing other states for giving abortion services to residents of their states. So I think that's Mississippi or Missouri. Like, I don't.
That reminds me of the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850.
Yeah. Like, so the idea is like, okay, so like New York just passed a law saying like the, like they're not going to comply with any state that's allowing suing a healthcare provider in New York for giving abortion to a resident of their states, essentially. But this also is going to be, I think this would test it's the ultimate test of federalism. Because obviously someone's going to sue. It's like someone's going to sue about what happens when states go after each other legally, when they start saying like, you can't do this here. Because then I was also walking this thought process through, like we were talking about, I was having a conversation, like a futurist conversation of what could possibly happen. And it's like, could you start sanctioning other states?
So there is case law where states have sued each other for various things. And like, it's usually under like the commerce clause cases. Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on what it is, but there have been cases where like the Supreme Court has decided like, either like no, like state A, you have no jurisdiction. You can't like, you know, there was one case I'm trying to think, it's like trash, like once like states were like sending all their trash to like another state. Oh, goodness.
So actually what's funny is that there is a clause, I can't remember what it's like. If you're a citizen of the United States, you are allowed to go to any state without impediment. Like,
yes, that's the commerce, that's under the commerce clause. Yes.
Right. And so that came up when Hawaii, the state, was considering banning people from the continental United States from flying in during COVID, because the continental United States was where all the cases were. And the idea was like, we're on an island. We do not have the ability to travel if we don't have enough medical services within our state. And then they said, our AG came back to us and said, oh, you can't do that because of the Commerce Clause. But has it really been tested? Like, when I think that it might turn legal. And then you get this idea of like, they're not even going to go to the Supreme Court at all to decide the case of states fighting against states because they don't recognize the Supreme Court. Like, say New York doesn't recognize the Supreme Court. So why are they going to go?
Yes, that is where my fear is. That is my fear more than anything else, because I think, like, I don't know, I see that happening and that scares me completely, because I don't know, I don't want to see a United States broken up into several different countries. Like, it sounds like crazy to envision something like that, but I think this decision opened up that potential can of worms, and the Supreme Court could have made a whole number of other rulings that kind of parsed it out and allowed, you know, for nuances. But instead of having a nuanced decision, they opened up this door to, I think, like, political instability. Like, and I'm not saying that women's rights aren't important and freedom of religion isn't important and how all of these issues that we've talked about is incredibly important. To me, like, that part terrifies me, because having a legal system that we can depend on and we can all trust is essential. And I just think that that weakened its foundation. Yeah.
I mean, we're teetering on what's so...
Maybe it's because I'm a lawyer, right? I think if I was like a social worker, I think...
No, but I want to get back to that fear too, because like prior to this decision, they were saying like, we're in a cultural war, like our society was teetering on the edge, and it, like, this decision might be the match.
Yeah.
You know, like, it might be, because if you think about it, like, it's turned into this turned into kind of like a proxy war, for, you know, conservative versus more liberal states. And it makes me fearful, because if you think about it, like if say like California, so Texas and in that region on the Gulf of Mexico, most people don't realize like that a lot of the goods pass through there. So a lot of some of the things that rely upon in our everyday life comes from the shipping. So like, say, for example, Texas is saying, I'm not recognizing California, so I'm not going to allow any of this produce or whatever to go to California. And then California is obligated to get its goods from Panama Canal. Like they would have to go through the Panama Canal to get their goods.
That using commerce, using economics has been a form of political protest for like states, as in like whole countries, as well as like states, individuals as well, you know, for a long time. Even looking at, you know, for example, how Delta threw its weight around when the governor of Georgia was taking, you know, away voting rights. I think they threatened to leave the state. I know Disney is obviously embroiled in a battle with Governor DeSantis. But like looking at like apartheid, you know, folks stop like doing trade with South Africa. And that is like a big reason why they were eventually, forced to change. And, you know, thinking about what's happening with Russia, you know, sanctions and embargoes and tariffs and all of these like things have been, and just imagine that happening in the States is just crazy, especially like at least back before there was like some idea that like, you know, below a certain parallel things were one way and above a certain, but like no, like this is real patchworky and real weird and real, like when you look at even like state maps like Pennsylvania, for example, like yeah, it went blue, but it's pretty red. It's like it's Philadelphia.
You know what's crazy also, if you think about economics, like, I mean, it's easy for the audience to understand economic sanctions now because like Russia and Ukraine, right? So like we could turn, that can be turned against the United States too. But what I think others don't understand is tax dollars. So like we all send our taxes to the feds and then that's distributed amongst the states. Some states take in more federal dollars than they give out and their residents paying taxes. One of those states is Texas. So Texas gets more money than its residents pay out.
Yeah.
And so it's like
most of the red states do. Like most of the money comes from New York and California. Let's keep it real.
So the point is I read something, I want to say it was in the New York Times. It was a brief mention of this, but there's been discussions of folks saying like, I don't want to send my tax dollars to a state that doesn't recognize certain constitutional rights. Why should my tax dollars go to Texas if I don't believe in what they're doing? So then there's like taxes. Like what if people just stop paying their federal taxes in mass?
The IRS would come after people.
But I mean, like, do they have the right to do so?
The last part was talking about what can we do. So I guess we're talking.
Yeah, let's talk about what we can do, because this is like so like disheartening. I'm listening to you talk and I'm like, oh my God, I just don't want like kids listening to this or be like, oh, everything's like going to fall apart. So is there anything that we can do to?
So just before we go into, I wanted to bring another example, Shauna, from this like idea of like interstate like regulation. So the Mann Act, which used to be called the White Slave Traffic Act, which was passed in 1910. It banned, among other things, the interstate transport of females for otherwise immoral purposes. And so one person who was famously arrested on this was Jack Johnson, was a Black boxer in like during the Depression era. But now the law is still in the books, but now it's applied to both men and women, or it's a gender, it's applied in a gender neutral way. But this federal act passed for the protection of white women to not like be going across state lines to have sex. And so, and even now there's still a vested interest in the states to like regulate. And I think most recently this was used against R. Kelly, and you know what he was doing with underage girls, and I think a charge that came up with Matt Gaetz. So you didn't hear about that?
No, I know that he had sex with a 17-year-old, but like
And there was some question of whether or not there was trafficking, or like whether or not like he had these girls travel across state lines. But the whole point is there is precedent for
of it being used in modern times
and of, you know, like this overreach or this reach of, like, you know, what happened, like one state having vested interest in the federal government helping to enforce that interest. So it could happen, like knowing the way this court has been deciding, and that would be outright chaos. I mean, a lot of these laws are set up. Another law that recently came out that's not directly related, but I think it is very much in line with this. I want to say in Indiana, they put a law on their, they proposed a law that if a girl, female athlete is suspected of being transgender, I think, or that they would be subject to a like physical like examination, like of their external and internal.
Oh my God. Gross.
And that's the level. Oh, that's where gross. We are. And so, like, if Roe's done, then, like, that also, like, if you live in that state, then, you know, because, like, where does it stop?
Okay, so what can we do?
Okay, you know what would be amazing is if more women ran for office and Congress just ended up being, like, predominantly women. I think we're like, if we just step up and say like we're gonna control everything else.
I don't know if women, all women necessarily agree with what we're saying, right? But I agree with your underlying point, Shauna, that become politically active if you are interested and have ever considered being involved, because we're not just one branch in this country, right? The judicial branch is only one of it. We have two other branches of government, and political activism is one way to hold back these judicial activism.
Also, be better than Christian cinema, because I know one thing is true, like one possible solution is that, so there's a clause in the Constitution that says 2/3 of the states come together and decide they want to amend that bad boy and codify certain rights, like, you know, the right against being enslaved your whole life. They can do that.
Yeah.
They've actually done it like 20 some odd times. So if the Congress was ever so moved, they could put together a little law and say, forget what the Supreme Court just said. You know, there is a constitutional right because we created it. Boom. It's called the 20 whatever amendment we're on right now. That's one possibility.
Okay, so it seems that politics is becoming really much more important than it ever was. So
like, we can't do anything right now. Okay, so that when we're talking about politics, we can't do anything while the Senate has a filibuster. There is no way on a map right now for us to get 60 Democrats that would vote.
Filibuster was invented.
It was invented for slave owners.
Like progress, civil rights, human rights. Like,
so first of all, we would either have to get pro-choice, 60 pro-choice senators, or we get rid of the filibuster. In order to get rid of the filibuster, Sinema and Manchin have to vote to overturn the filibuster. They stopped Voting Rights Act from going through the filibuster this last Congress. They're stopping reproductive rights. The House voted out a bill that would make abortion available to every single person, like no matter what state you lived in. They did all of this, but the filibuster is stopping it. There's no way on the political map in order to get 60 votes, but we can. Georgia is close to keeping its Democratic senator. Send money to Georgia. I've been donating money to the Democratic Party.
Donate money. I think another strategy that has been tried in other countries in modern times that I feel like we should seriously consider. But I just don't know that, like, women are just so divided in this country, patriarchy. But sex strikes have been sex boycotts have been very effective strategies throughout history, where folks in society, usually women, refrain from having sex until shit happens that needs to happen, or some things stop happening. And so it's a form of temporary sexual abstinence. Sex drives have been used to protest everything from war to gang violence. So it's this ancient, or this history, or this evidence of a sex strike back in ancient Greece, but also in Nigeria in pre-colonial times, women periodically formed themselves into councils, and where, you know, one of their things was to, you know, make sure the men were staying in line, and as a form of punishment, they would tell all the women to, like, you know, our legs are crossed. Like, we're not doing that. Like, the men are not acting right. And one of the things they would do was just, like, leave the town. Like, all the women would just leave.
You know what's ironic about using the irony about using sex as, like, a way to get whatever, what you were just saying in regards to, like, abstaining, is that you have, like, the Proud Boys that have infiltrated the mainstream media of the conservative right. And the whole thing with these, you know, these groups like Proud Boys is they abstain from sex.
Well, they're like incels. But I wonder, like, if they could even, incel stands for involuntarily celibate. That's the name that these folks have given themselves, a lot of them. Yeah. So it obviously isn't, like, a foolproof, but I think it's definitely a thought. Cause, I mean, so much of this is, like, it's, you know, it's connected to sex. Like, unlike, you know, other instances where sex strikes have been used, like, this is, like, you know, a woman's, like, reproductive options are, like, being threatened. So it's, like, you know, women are intended to bear more of the burden for sex than men are, in a very, like, fundamental way, that, like, not even just for the purposes of just, like, punishing men in society and, like, trying to, like, put pressure in the larger society to, like, change things, but also to protect ourselves, because,
you know, if we say this is all about sex, it's interesting too.
Power too.
Right. So it's also interesting, the legal logic to overturn Roe versus Wade, and Thomas mentioned this, and some activist groups on the right have mentioned this, but going after your privacy to have gay sex.
Oh yeah. No, they used to, you know,
the, like, sodomy, I think is what it was.
Yeah. Sodomy laws. It would just go into people's homes. I mean, these are the same, like, you know, police would do the same kinds of raids on, like, interracial couples. You know, they just, you know, burst into people's bedrooms at 3 o'clock in the morning to try to, like, catch them, you know, in the acts.
So, all right. So some ideas we have: run for political office, send money to places like Georgia, where where it could be a close call with who's in power. Hey, if you think that having a sex abstinence situation going on with your significant other is going to help change their mind,
we got to do it. We got to do it all together.
Right? I love it. I think it's kind of cool. I'm not sure if it's going to work these days, but I think it's kind of neat. I also think that come next election, we really do need to vote. And you really do need to write in letters to whoever your elected officials are, because at the end of the day, I do think that people's pocketbooks and personal interests are affected, and politicians lose their jobs if they don't support the point of view that you want. So I do think that, you know, old fashioned, get out and vote and write letters in to your congressman can at least help activate these other two branches of government, because maybe we can get that 60%. Maybe not today, and it's not there right now, but we got to have a longer viewpoint on this.
So
it's not an overnight.
Talk about other things that we can do in order to get this, is we can get around other political things that are far off, is get rid of, what is that called in our general election? We're not
the one where they... The Electoral College?
get rid of the Electoral College is one, get rid of that, which has its, you know, roots in giving white landowner men the more power than anybody else in our country. So get rid of that. But also to take into account, like, even if you have a Democratic representative or senator, vote anyway, this election, because if there's a wave of voters, like populists, if there's an increase in the amount of votes that are given, it can also just show like people are ready to support change. And I think others, like there's this rhetoric out there that during the midterms, the party, there's a change in party power. So there's an anticipation that the Republicans are going to take control of the House and the Senate. So what people don't realize is if you sit out this election and voting, they could control, and even maybe if they have enough, reverse a veto from Biden to ban it in every single state. So if you got to be scared. They could do this.
And if you are a leader in an organization, if you have more influence than just over your own life and all of that, then I would say there's lots of, you know, especially if are a national employer, we shouldn't, I do agree with, you know, not doing business with states that like don't respect, you know, and unfortunately, they don't respect human rights. And unfortunately, the people in those states suffer, when XYZ corporation doesn't come. But, you know, the corporations, they're not always the most respectful anyway. But thinking about just we won't do business, or we won't, you know, headquarter, or we won't, or we'll move out, you know, and just using that leverage to, you know, they throw your weight around. Like, you control elections anyway with your money. But then also, on a less cynical note, providing like actual robust reproductive health care for your employees, no matter what. And so if that means paying for people to go out of state, especially in this remote working world, you may have employees all over the country. And so even just having messaging that like, we're here for you, and we'll make sure that your health care needs are met, you know, regardless of where you live, could go a really long way. I know when I was at Yale, or when we were at Yale, like, I don't know if it was the truth or it was just kind of a running joke that like Yale would like cover like two abortions.
Brandy, I hope it makes you feel better. There are a number of corporations that are doing this nationally that have made statements and sent out to the general public and also their own employees that we are going to cover cover any kind of reproductive need that you have. I know I work with a couple of different employers where I work in my as a lawyer. They sent out a statement that we have employees all over the country and in all different states. We will be here to support you and whatever that you need. And there are employers doing this all across the country. So
you know what's ironic about that? You know what's ironic about that as well is Amazon came out and said, we'll support like traveling costs to go to other states to get abortions. And I'm like, Amazon, you're trying to get media, even though you were against unionizing.
I don't even let people pee like in a regular interval.
I also think that like, I just want to make this other horror show of why you should go out and get involved in politics. For example, if we stop recognizing the Supreme Court and states start fighting with each other, then the federal government will have less power in recognition. And then internationally, who's going to do work with the United States and the federal government if they can't guarantee that all the states are going to follow whatever the agreement is with the international community? And then we're weakened by our adversaries, and then the United States becomes a pariah state.
We're getting there.
Wow, Shauna, thank you for that very uplifting last words. Really appreciate it. But I agree that we need to like look at these possibilities, because we really, you know, for all its problems in this country, and we enumerate them as we go along with each of these episodes, there really is a lot of good here, because we do have a certain amount of power as people. So Get Out, I sort of feel like, I hate saying this, like in a way, it's like this moment of reckoning. We got to get out. We got to get involved. We got to speak up, because it is very scary. I hate hearing everything that you're saying, Shauna, but I agree with almost every scenario you painted.
I also think we have to start looking at ways in which we can invest in public health care services, like for women who are forced to give birth. Like, let's try to minimize the maternal death rate.
Healthcare providers, also, I mean, you know, just like so many, like hospitals need this kind of work, and like medical practitioners, but also we need more robust sex education. The number one cause of abortion is unwanted pregnancy. And, you know, obviously rape, incest, there's not a whole lot of control there. But in other instances where, you know, if you knew about all of the other ways of protecting yourself from pregnancy, besides just don't do it, then, you know, far less people would have abortions in the first place. That's another reason why I think it's disingenuous, because, you know, if they really didn't want people to have abortions, they would also give folks access to sex education and free contraception and all that good stuff. Because, like, you know, abortion isn't the first or only way to avoid pregnancy.
That's why it's pro-birth.
I think along those same lines, right, that is why it's pro-birth. If you are in those states that are now having a lot of these anti-abortion laws, I would say come up with creative ways to hold the men accountable, because I think if you hold the men accountable for a woman going through the pregnancy, then maybe they'll change their mind and say, hey, she can have the abortion. So I think if a girl has to like leave high school, then whatever guy is with her, he gets to leave high school too until she can come back, right? If she's got to have like, she misses out, you miss out too. I think we have to really like try and equate that responsibility with that life, you know? So if you are in a state like that, try and be creative out of the box to get the men involved.
So here's an idea. What if we made it illegal to ejaculate outside of a sexual encounter? Because technically, it's the same thing. Because a sperm cell, that is a potential life. So every time men go out here and they, you know, ejaculate, and there's no womb, there's no, like, what are we doing? We're wasting.
Hey, get creative if you're in a state like that and speak up. That's what I have to say.
Another thing we have to do is tighten our privacy on our internet, like our legal rights on the internet. And I mentioned that just because there's talk of tracking menstrual cycles in Texas to see whether or not women are missing their periods and then they start their periods. So you got to look at that. And then there's also the ability for them to go into your search engine to see whether or not on your computer you were Googling getting abortion services in other states. What, so these all can be used against you in court. Can all be used against you in court.
And also look at cases in other countries where abortion is illegal. Like, women have been prosecuted for having miscarriages, literally.
And that's actually happened recently. A woman was put into jail, like she was arrested and convicted for her miscarriage.
So yeah, we have to educate ourselves on the cautionary tales so that we can, you know, start to create that political momentum in the opposite direction.
And then also be careful with social media too. So I don't know how TikTok works. So if you are a young person and you're on social media, and you're talking about, you know, reproductive services or going out in that way to receive care, just be careful about your social media print. You don't want them to know whether or not you got abortions.
Well, on that enlightening and
Handmaid's Tale. Oh, talking about Handmaid's Tale, I know we're supposed to be done, but Margaret Atwood, who is the author of Handmaid's Tale, she said she based that book upon the rhetoric that was used by the religious right, which were the ones that drove this overturn.
That was back in the 80s. Like, this has been a long, long time coming. Like, that what happened in the 60s, I mean, I almost feel like, and we can cut this part, but I almost feel like what the justices were doing in the 60s was more judicial activism, because our history, our country's history has historically been extremely racist and sexist, and most of the case law is such. So that 10-year gap, that Warren Court, they was really I'm not gonna say freestyling, but it was like, Black people are people, and we're gonna protect them, and you can't discriminate, and like,
talking about Handmaid's Tale and the rhetoric around that is, okay, so our birth rate is actually dropping, like, overall.
Especially with white people.
With white people. And so it's like, they want to be pro-birth to force us to have babies.
And me, she wrote that literally in the 80s. But I mean, that was literally what was happening under slavery. Like, people were being forced to have babies. That was happening under colonization. Like that's war. Like, rape is a tool of
it is a tool of war. And
race mixing is a form of, you know, cultural genocide. It's like,
also, it just makes me sometimes when I go down
the let me fix it. I don't mean it race, like force mixing of the race, not because that's like the racist white people. They're like, oh, we don't want miscegenation because like that's gonna like that's racist. I'm sorry, I don't think what I said came out right, but go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I try not to go to this place where I'm thinking, oh, this is just another example of how white people hate me simply because of the color of my skin and that I was born a cis female. Like, you know, the only, like, that is, but arguments like this and those that support originalist texts, interpretations of the Constitution essentially are saying, like, I think you're less than me because you are brown and you are a woman.
Yeah, you should not be able to choose for your life. And in fact, a life that is not here yet, an organism, a cluster of cells, we're gonna sit here and tell you that it's more important than you.
Like, you, because it's not even about you.
You could literally be dying and we won't give you an abortion.
All right.
So, holla. Where can you find our podcast? Can you tell our audience?
Oh my gosh, don't make me do this. Okay, let's see if I can remember the spiel here. Okay, you can find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else a podcast can be. I'm missing a third one there.
That's good. And if you're watching us, and obviously you see us on YouTube.
Catch us on YouTube, right? And the Anti-Racism Academy.
In the Anti-Racism Academy. Thank you all so much for watching, and let's pray on it, burn some sage, do whatever you have to do, because we need some help.
For sure. Bye.
Bye. Thanks all.